Welcome to Needle Exchange, where we explore the stories behind the stitches. I'm Jamie Chalmers, aka Mr. X Stitch, and today I am interviewing Manuela Caniato. This is the second half of our Needle Exchange, and it takes us into the heart of Manuela's practice, embroidered portraits that disrupt ideas of beauty and permanence. We cover her fascination with cuts and scars, the tension between fine couture techniques and raw expression, and her plans for landscapes and volcanoes in future work. We finish, as always, with her cultural touch points. And if you've not listened to the first part of our chat, be sure to tune in to that. Another artist who plays with darkness amidst beauty is Michelle Kingdom, and you can find out more about her in Needle Exchanges 61 and 62. If you enjoy this episode, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next conversation, or mix it, either way, when I'll be back with another fantastic needlework artist. So until then, enjoy the show. Would you have found it easier to step out and declare yourself an artist if you were doing it with painting or some of the more familiar media? Do you think being a textile artist is doubly difficult?
I try to learn how to do digital art with Procreate. I don't know if you know the app for the iPad. And I really loved it. And then what did I do with it? Patterns for textile prints.
Okay, right. Yeah.
It always goes back to that. I can't stop it. I really can't do anything else, probably. Programmed from birth.
It does feel that. Well, that's it, isn't it? You just go with your flow. Because you've lived in Belgium for a long time, I'm curious. Belgium has an embroidery tradition. I would argue, from a layman's perspective, that it's quite a traditional tradition. I don't necessarily know any different.
You talk about lace.
Yeah, lace, and then I think about some of the more, it's the embellishments, like you were saying before, embroidery being a nice way of making something practical that looks a bit nicer than just a normal thing.
Let's say that fashion here is not as present as in Italy, in Belgium.
You can say that about anywhere. That's not unreasonable. We're not dissing Belgium there. Italy, like, is Italy, you know, so I think.
Yeah, exactly. So on the other hand, there's a different approach in Italy. So in Italy, if you want to do, for instance, embroidery, you get immediately, I don't know, attracted by a system in place of a school for high fashion, etc. Whilst here, I could enroll in a textile in an academy of arts in general when there is a course of textile art, which I don't think in Italy exists. No, in Italy there are fashion schools or embroidery schools like Royal School of Needlework, very high standard professionals for them, you know?
Yeah.
Whilst here the art academy where I enrolled is for everyone. Everyone wants to be creative. Okay, so there are different sections, drawing, sculpture and textile art. And there was also lace. But now the teacher stopped teaching because she went to pension and they couldn't find anyone else to teach it anymore. So it's gone. This art has expired. It was very much connected to old women and also in religious organizations, etc. But now it's over.
I think that's quite commonplace, isn't it? It is one of those craft forms that, because it doesn't have a lot of utility, and when you do need some lace, a machine can bang it out as quick as you like for tuppence for next to no money.
Of course.
Then, yeah, it's very much a victim.
Yeah, and it's incredibly expensive and time consuming, and it has no use. I mean, why? It's just decoration.
Have you tried making lace?
I have.
Quite enjoyed it. I think it's quite nice. It's very meditative.
I like it both with crochet and with the needle. I like it. I even thought about going to the school in Burano. I don't know, in Venice, do you know it? There's still, but it's incredibly traditional. Both, and here as well, there's another one in Bruges, also traditional, super traditional. So they had a big revolution.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So in Bruges, they had a little revolution recently. They use colors. Can you imagine? Colors.
It's just like some magic, isn't it? All of a sudden they've gone, wait, we could do this in another colour. And amazing. Yeah. There's a couple of artists. There's a guy called Pierre Fouché, who's a South African bobbin lace artist who did a lot of work to do with homosexual porn stars and big images that were not graphic, but definitely quite impactful using that technique. And I think that sort of thing is really satisfying. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it could be because you are now on a trajectory of being a bit weird in a good way, then maybe you could be a bit weird with some lace somewhere down the line as well. That might be a good...
Thank you for the suggestion.
Yeah, so you've done quite a few portraits now, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I am... my purpose is to get enough of them to organize an exhibition here in Leuven. So I think I have enough now, and I'm trying to see, but I think it will take place in end of February, beginning of March.
Okay. Have you got any other ideas creeping in? Because it feels like the principle that you're applying can be applied in many different directions.
Yes, I do, and it's still growing in my head. I already tried a couple of still lifes and a couple of landscapes because, you know, also, well, landscapes are damaged, really damaged by now, but I still don't have in my eyes the image I want to get to, so it's still growing there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Landscapes are more. Landscapes inspire me more than still lives. Still lives is less my thing.
Yeah. No, I can see it because with still life, like, I don't know, a bowl of fruit that is moldy, that's kind of been done, hasn't it? Those sorts of things have been done. There's an artist who does, I can't remember her name, but who does massive fruit with all kinds of beautiful mold, all of them, you know, those sorts of things.
So actually, yes.
The destruction of landscape is a more compelling subject matter, isn't it?
Yeah, so I tried, and still have to think of exactly what I want. I also have in mind a volcano, you know, with lava and this explosion and then the lava. But again, I'm still in a phase of dreaming of it.
That's excellent. No, it's been, like I said at the start, you know, when you're judging prizes, it's interesting because you see a lot of beautiful work and you've got to admire people who are willing to put themselves out there. But for me, it really pushes my buttons when someone does go a bit weird because it's that pattern interrupt. It's the thing that I really like because life is beautiful, but sometimes you need the ugliness so that you can appreciate the beauty. And so when someone, you know, work like yours comes along, it will just push people's buttons and it will just stop and make them think. And I think that's just a great thing to be able to do.
Thank you. Such a compliment. Thank you.
Too good. Right. Let's go on to some tricky questions. Now, because we've covered the history of fashion and we've covered beauty and decay, all the easy stuff now. Let's talk about music. Can we talk about music?
Yes.
I'm interested because you're from Italy, but you live in Belgium. So I couldn't really put a pin on what your favourite album might be. So please enlighten
me. My favourite album is a compilation of songs by Caetano Veloso and Gilberto Gil, who are now in approaching their 90s, more than 80 years old, both of them. And they are maybe my favorite musicians ever. And so they did recently this album 50 years of music together. And from a very young age, I met one of my best friends who's Brazilian, and he introduced me to Brazilian music. And I was very young. So we were at school, and police and Sting were the big thing, which I adored, of course, like everyone else. But at the same time, I got to know Brazilian music, and since then has been the soundtrack of my life. And in, of course, it's not Italian music, and so I can't say in Italy is as popular as Italian music. It's not, or general pop, but it's very popular in Italy, Brazilian music. In general, so a lot of famous artists of the 80s, well, very they started very early, they started in the 60s, but they went on singing Brazilian songs also in Italian. The same thing is in, happened in France, so yeah, it must be, I don't know, the sound is probably closer to the Italian tradition than pop. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know why, but very popular, very beloved, and I also love them. I don't know if you like Brazilian music.
Do you like Brazilian music? Yeah. I do. I think there's some little overlap, isn't there, between like that kind of jazz and maybe like the bossa nova kind of Italian style, sure, of music somewhere. That sort, yes, of 60s, yeah, 70s blend. I will quite happily listen to some. There's an artist, oh, I might need to Google where she's from now, an artist called Flora Purim, who I think she's Brazilian. She's like in her 80s.
Yes.
And
yes,
I bought her most recent album on vinyl lately because she's got a beautiful voice and there's some really nice tunes on it. And I've got a daughter called Flora, so it gave me an excuse to add that one into my collection as well, you see.
But, oh, nice.
Yeah, I do like a lot of that stuff. And I even Italian music, there was an interesting compilation set that was called Beat et Sincetta, I think it is. I may have got that title completely wrong. What happened was, in the 50s and 60s, there were lots of jazz musicians. And in the 70s, the scene kind of died down a bit and they were looking for work. And they ended up being paid to write the soundtracks for adult films. So, ooh, those kind of films. But it, yes, turned out that they wrote really groovy music for those kind of films, you know. So this compilation album, there's like three albums and they're just really groovy tunes that just happen to have made, you know, to be in the background of people enjoying themselves, shall we say.
Let's say that, yes.
But you know, that kind of upbeat music, I really kind of like those flavors with strings and all those kind of things in them and stuff like that.
Yeah, I see. Oh, nice. I didn't know about that. Interesting.
Mm. I'll try and send you a link to that afterwards. Do you listen to music while you're working? I feel like maybe that's why you're jumping around so much.
I listen to music when I work. I always listen to something. I listen either to music or to audiobooks.
Right.
Yeah. So equal parts, I think. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just wondered whether maybe the music, when you're making the big cuts, it's just some up-tempo music. And then when you're doing the repair, maybe it's someone listening to a story or something.
Yes. 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 Yes.
That's a good segue into your favorite book.
My favorite book is Cutting for Stone by Verghese. It's a book about twins. It's a very complicated story of medicine. Basically, these are two doctors, and their father was also a doctor. Then the mother was a nurse. They Indian family in Addis Ababa, and then one moves to the United States, and well, it is a very intense book and with a lot of medical terms and experience in it. It's a medical drama on paper.
Okay. Do you read a lot? I feel like you probably do read a lot.
I am an obsessive reader. I read every day of, I've read every day of my life, and it's quite long, so I've read a lot.
That's cool. I'm still trying to, I always read business books and I read graphic novels, but now I'm particularly having conversations with people like yourself. I try and like take note of the books that people recommend a lot of the time to buy my wife as Christmas presents, I'll be honest, but still trying to read the classics. I just bought Catcher in the Rye, which I've never read,
yep.
which is supposed to be a classic. So people say that would be a good one. So I'm going to dive into that.
Very soon. A good one and it's short. So
yeah,
it can't be wrong if it's short.
That's what I like. If a book's got short chapters, you can kind of bounce your way through them. I read 100 Years of Solitude. That's doesn't have short chapters. That's not short.
No, there's nothing short in it.
No, but I loved it. I love that. It was a slog and I put it down. But I think there's one bit, I'm sure it's in that one, where a lady is ranting and there's one sentence that is like 1.5 pages long, just one sentence. And I was like, I absolutely love that sort of thing. Again, it's just that kind of just goes off to the side. That's a great shout. And then do you have a favorite film?
That was probably the most difficult question because I have many favorite films, but okay, I had to choose one. And I chose The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou and by Wes Anderson. And it's a very light film. Well, as always with Wes Anderson, very nice to look at. But so full of colors, it's amazing. And also kind of silly. I like the silliness, stupidity of it.
No, I can see it tunes in with your work, isn't it? You know, your work has that silliness, even if there's quite dramatic, like irreverence, perhaps.
Oh, what a nice elegant word. I thought silly, but irreverence is very refined.
We'll write that one down. go on. By the sounds of it, then, there were quite a few contenders. What other films spring to mind that you found?
I read again Edith Wharton, recently, The Age of Innocence. And I watched the film again, The Age of Innocence, and I also like that a lot with the costumes. I mean, the costumes are impressive, really like that. Classic tale, classic film, everything is classic about it, but visually very rich and inspiring. Also, I've seen... recently again Apocalypse Now, also another feast for the eyes, but in a dark way, and Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad used to be one of my favorite novels when I was young, and the filmic version was one of my favorite films. And also science fiction, I like it a lot, though it has recently a bit the tendency of becoming this American war feeling that is not really my thing. I like Dunes.
What about The Fifth Element? That feels like that would be a film that would suit you.
Which one is that?
The Fifth Element. I feel like it's a Luc Besson film. It's got Bruce Willis in it and Mila Jovovich, and Jean-Paul Gaultier did the costumes.
Yes. It says something. I really have to concentrate to remember it visually.
Mm.
Yeah, okay, I'll watch it again.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those. That is probably one of the few films where if it happens to be on, I'll probably find myself watching it all the way through, because the story's kind of cool about love being the fifth element, spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the art direction and because of the costumes and the style of it all, you know, it is in the same way as where is that? I feel like the sartorial elements of a film are quite important for you.
Yes, they are. They are very important, I must say. So I looked at it with really from close by, how did they do it? How was it made?
To bring back full circle, it's been quite nice to talk to students at the Royal School of Needlework and help them understand that if they play the cards right, then their work can be featured. I did a podcast recently with Hattie McGill, who's done a lot of work in the movies now with like detailed embroidery and stuff. And it's nice,
yeah.
You know, 10 years ago, there weren't the same opportunities. And then sort of Game of Thrones comes along and everything gets opened up.
Yes.
Because people want all these details and stuff. So
yes.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Fantastic. Really. What do you think about Bridgerton?
So I don't mind Bridgerton, right? I don't tend to go for period dramas because I'm a middle-aged man, maybe, which is, and I recognise my own shortcomings. But do you know what? I really like the costumes in Bridgerton. And there's one, I was going to say Bridgerton to you because we watched the most recent series. I kind of dip in and out of it, whereas my wife watches it. And there's a woman who had a dress, and the bow on the dress must have been about 8 feet wide or something. But it feels like the budget and the costumes and that, they were just going and having a good laugh with it because they just could. They were really confident about it. I absolutely love that.
Yeah. They're full of humor. Like it.
Mm.
I don't particularly follow the rest, but the costumes are really special. Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that one completely. Right. Is there, now I know that you've already given us a fact that not a lot of people know about you. So I'm going to prod you to see if there's a different one because I feel like you've had a long and varied career. So is there an interesting fact that not a lot of people know about Manuela Caniotto?
Okay. I already told you that I do not work with a hoop.
Yeah.
And
but what about that time you used to be a knife thrower in a circus? Or, you know, there'll be something else. You can speak 14 languages or something.
Okay. So I wanted to be a prima ballerina at La Scala when I was a child. It's not very exotic, but it's a secret because I am rather tall, almost 1.80 meters.
Oh, wow.
My career as a ballerina lasted not so long. I'm not also not so tiny. I mean, I'm rather broad. And so, no.
You're a woman of substance.
So prima ballerina or second ballerina or ballerina whatsoever. No way. Okay.
Yeah.
No, I confessed.
It's very alluring. Like both of my daughters have gone through ballerina phases. And in some ways, I think they're coming back out. I do know we've got a friend whose daughter's just gone to Rombert School of Dance. Like she's amazing. And she's worked for it. But you do just wonder. You just wonder about the life she's going to have now and how much relaxed fun it's going to be. Do you know what I mean? It's quite the commitment, isn't
it? Oh, yes. Well, they're sports women and men, sport, real sport, high-level sport. So, yes, that type of sacrifice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't made for it, of course. But, yeah. And do your daughter want to become ballerinas?
I don't think so. One of them, like my oldest daughter, we're realizing that she's kind of a bit ADHD. And one of the tropes that comes from that, I saw a video recently that said that people with ADHD will often find the most direct route between A and B in their brains without realizing. And how that manifests is Flora walking into doorways a lot. Doorways that have been in our house in the same place all the time. You know, but she does those sorts of things. So she's quite naturally clumsy. And I don't feel like that's a good outcome for a ballerina. So she's at peace with that. But she loves to dance. And the other day she made up a dance to do with K-pop Demon Hunters, a film that you know about if you've got daughters. And it was beautiful. And she's so sincere. So she loves that. But I think we've managed to kind of steer her away from that as a career path. And then with Annie, my younger, she's a bit more kind of street dance. She's a bit more nonchalant.
Yes, like, yes.
She could be good at anything if she wants to be because that's the kind of cool girl that she is. So she'd be a bit more street dance, but at the same time, I think she probably wants to get into like becoming a boy racer and just getting, she likes cars sort of somehow.
Oh.
So she's my little tomboy friend, I think, really.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, both my grandchildren are into street dance, both of them. Their father is a dancer, is a dance teacher, so they're in that environment. Yeah.
They've got good chances then, whereas, as I've said to many people, the day I became a dad was the day that both my comedy and my dancing style clicked into place, because I was a dad dancer, I just wasn't a dad. So now that's all fine. I dance very badly, very badly. But I'm at peace with that. That's all good. Hey, Manu, thank you for having a needle exchange with me.
Thank you very much. I was really glad to talk to you.
And congratulations on your win.
Thank you. So proud.